Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast today. My name is Terry Fletcher. So today, we are going to basically kind of get into the ICD-10 when it comes to COVID testing. I think there's been a lot of questions. There's been a lot of just confusion. I know last year I did, a couple months ago, I did a clarifying question on ICD-10-CM, but I think it's important that we look at coding for outpatient services with the ICD-10 codes and just making sure that you're testing and you're looking at the timeline correctly. But first, I wanted to say I hope everyone had a good Super Bowl weekend. I'm recording this podcast prior to the Super Bowl, so I have no idea who won. But I did find it funny that with the year of the pandemic, it was only fitting that the Super Bowl had a home team playing at home for the first time ever. And we all know what it's like to move our work home and be working virtually. So I did bet on Tampa Bay to win, so you guys will know if I won or not before I do. And not because I like Tom Brady or the team. He was a Steeler fan thorn for ever on our side, but because I respect what he's doing at 43 years old. I mean, I just can't believe he's there again, so it's crazy. But let's get back to our topic at hand today. And what I want to look at is, again, the ICD-10 codes, but how it relates to outpatient testing. Because let's face it, when COVID-19 emerged in early 2020, a new ICD-10-CM codes used to identify the condition were not available to us. So we were like, what do we code? And then subsequent ICD-10 codes and guidelines for reporting COVID-19, they changed so many times as the pandemic evolved. Throughout 2020, it was hard to know what the correct application was. So now the correct application for ICD-10-Z codes to reporting counters for COVID testing, those were particularly confusing. And I know a lot of you coders were left to kind of reacquaint yourselves again when new codes and guidance went into effect January 1st, 2021. So let's go over this, see if you were on the right track when coding for your services, again, relating to certain COVID claims. And I will also follow this up on my blog, on my website, and link you into the excellent article that AHIMA put out with this information in mind. So we just want to make sure that we give them credit where credit is due as well. So let's take a look at this. Now, I know a lot of you listen to me either in your car on your way to work. I know a lot of you that are working virtually and remotely have been listening to me at your desk. So if you have a minute just to kind of take some time to listen and take some notes, this is probably one of those note-taking podcasts, if you will. If you just want to take it all in and then later on take a look at my blog, that's probably a good idea. So the first thing we're going to look at, and again, I'm going to do it as a timeline. So basically, we're looking at last year first. So let's look at 2020, and let's look at February, let's say. So a patient has symptoms and suspected exposure to COVID, and it's ruled out. So what did we code back then? Well, we coded Z03.818, and that was an encounter for observation of suspected exposure to other biological agents ruled out. Now, if a patient had symptoms and confirmed or suspected exposure to COVID with negative or unknown results, we would code Z20.828, contact with and suspected exposure to other viral communicable diseases. And then if patient had no symptoms, no confirmed or suspected exposure to COVID with negative or unknown results, then it was Z11.59, encounter for screening or other viral diseases, or it was Z03.818, back to what we coded originally, encounter for observation for suspected exposure for other biological agents ruled out. So this is where it got really crazy, because then we hit April 1st, 2020, and for the first one, as far as patient has symptoms and a suspected exposure, there was no change. Or patient has symptoms and confirmed or suspected exposure, there was no change. But a patient had no symptoms, no confirmed or suspected exposure to COVID-19 with negative or unknown results. Now they changed it to Z11.59, and there was no extra, there was only Z11.59, I should say, encounter for screening for other viral diseases. And then in August 5th, 2020, they now had a new code that was Z20.828, or instructions, I should say, on the AHIMA FAQ sheet, which went up and said, now you're supposed to use that contact with suspected exposure to other viral communicable diseases. So they kept changing what we were supposed to do. And then new codes that became into effect on January 1st of 2021, and this is again for a patient that has symptoms and suspected exposure to COVID-19 is ruled out, we have a new code now. It's Z20.822, contact with and suspected exposure to COVID-19. So what happened in 2021 is we ended up getting a specific code for COVID. It wasn't just for a viral disease or communicable viral disease. It was for COVID specifically. So patients have symptoms and confirmed or suspected exposure to COVID-19 with negative or unknown results. Remember, I said we were coding contact, the Z20.828. Well, now we're coding Z20.822 again. And same thing with no symptoms, no confirmed or suspected. We're back to Z20.822 again. That code, the contact with and suspected exposure, it seems like of COVID-19, it seems like the new guidelines for testing when it comes to suspected exposure means that everybody's been exposed. They didn't say that back in February or April of 2020, but now they're saying that as of, actually it was of August last year, and then definitely as of January 2021. So it looks like everybody has contact and suspected exposure, and that's how they're telling us to code for it, which I just thought was very, I don't know, kind of interesting to actually do it that way. So then we move on to asymptomatic individuals. So they don't have any symptoms, but they test positive for COVID-19. So in February of last year, 2020, we would code B97.29, other coronavirus, as the cause of diseases classified elsewhere. But then as of April 1st, 2020, when we got the new code for COVID-19, we would code U07.1. Now that has not changed in August of last year, and it does not change in January 1st of 2021. So if even an asymptomatic individual, if they test positive, that's the code, the U07.1 since April of last year. Now what happens if there's a false positive? And do they take that out of the statistical information? You know, I want to know who's following up with that, because the numbers are high and there's a lot of false positives. So let's find out, and hopefully they're doing some kind of an audit on that to find out what's going on. Then we have individuals who patient previously had COVID-19, okay, was seen for follow-up exam and COVID test is negative. So that would be me, for example. I had it in February of last year, was seen for a follow-up, actually to give antibodies in May, but now before I went to visit my daughter, I went and tested negative. I've had two negative tests now just to make sure. Well, if it was February last year, it would have been encounter for follow-up exam after completed treatment for conditions other than neoplasm. Well, that doesn't make any sense, especially with what we were dealing with, but that's all we had. But they clarified that, or I should say gave us a better option in 2021, that now we would code Z09, and it's just the three digits, encounter for follow-up exam after completed treatment for conditions other than neoplasm, but we also would have a secondary diagnosis of Z86.16. We finally have personal history of COVID-19. Now, to be able to code for COVID-19, you had to at some point tested positive. It's not the assumption that you had it. I see a lot of people saying, oh, I had it. I wasn't tested, but I know I had it. Well, I know this is going to sound weird, but you could have had a traditional upper respiratory infection. You could have had the flu. You could have had something that wasn't listed as COVID. I know everybody wants to put that on there for everything, but it may not have been that. And so you really have to be careful about making assumptions on how things should be coded. And that's why we just don't want you to do that. We want to make sure that you have official coding guidance on something so that you know how it should be coded instead of how you want to code it. Now we have another one for testing scenario. So here's a patient who presents to the emergency department with cough and shortness of breath. So it was acute upper respiratory infection. COVID test is performed and result is negative. The physician's assessment is acute upper respiratory infection and the patient is discharged home. So that was the G06.9. That was back in February of last year. And then for upper respiratory infection. And then we had a Z03.818 for encounter for observation for suspected exposure to other biological agents ruled out. Well, there was no change in April last year. There was a minimal change in August of last year, but then in January of this year, we still code the acute upper respiratory infection, but they want you to also code the Z20.822, contact with and suspected exposure to COVID-19. So there's nothing that says in that assessment that the patient was exposed, but the new guidelines are saying that everybody's been exposed now that there's millions and millions of people who have been exposed to COVID. So I find this interesting when it comes to how the timeline now works going from a year ago, because that was February 20th. We're now at February 9th, and it's crazy to me what the direction is now. A patient presents to another scenario. Patient presents to the emergency department with fever and cough after spending the weekend caring for an elderly aunt with COVID. COVID-19 test is performed and it's negative. An MD assessment is acute URI with patient discharge home. Now this makes sense. You have exposure plus you have an acute upper respiratory infection. So J06.9 plus the Z20.822. I'm not excited about having it basically a suspected exposure when there wasn't anything in the record that says that. But you will find when you look at the timeline, the link I'm going to send or put on my blog, that this is what they're telling everybody to put as either a primary or secondary diagnosis. So make sure that you look at this, because when it's information that comes from CDC or AHIMA or the AHA, the American Hospital Association, this is something that you can kind of back up why you're coding something, even if it doesn't sound copacetic, because this is what the direction they're giving us. So here is another one. Patient presents to the physician clinic requesting a COVID-19 test. The patient has no symptoms, no known or suspected exposure. The test is negative. Guess how they want you to code it now? Well, in 2020, we were coding it as Z11.59, encounter for screening for other viral diseases. Patient just wanted it. In 2021, they want you to code Z20.822, contact with and suspected exposure to COVID. But it says the patient has no symptoms, no known or suspected exposure, and the test is negative, and they still want you to code it with exposure to COVID. I'm looking at this, and I'm telling you this only because this is what's published out there, and I want you to be aware of it. And believe me, it's making me a little crazy here. Then we have one, and this is one that's interesting. It says, patient comes in for an outpatient removal of a squamous cell carcinoma of the skin of the nose. Patient has no COVID symptoms, but routine testing is done and the test is negative. Well, how do you think you code that? Well, you would code it as C44.301. That's unspecified malignant neoplasm of skin of nose. And they want you to also slap that COVID on there. Z20.822, contact with and suspected exposure to COVID. So patient has no symptoms, routine testing is done because they want everybody tested that comes in. I would probably start to question this, but I know I am already. I've already sent scathing letters, but this is what they're telling us to do. And that's why I wanted you to see this, because the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they had put out something that called the coding encounters related to COVID coronavirus outbreak. And these are the official coding guidelines supplement. And they put it in for American Health Information Management Association, so the FAQ sheet. And then also CDC updated it January 1st of this year. So it's out there saying that this is how they want us to code it. And it's also part of the American Hospital Association Coding Clinic, which instructs us how to code for services. So I'm very surprised at this, just so you know, but I have to tell you what it is so that you are able to get your testing paid for, so you know what is being looked at. And that right now, and I guess the biggest takeaway from that is that right now, the industry and coding industry, and also looking at the American Health Association, information, also the HEMA, AHA, CDC, all of it. It seems like they feel that everybody's exposed to COVID at this point. So a year later, that's what they're looking at. So make sure you take a look at that. And if you can't find it on my blog, if we haven't put it up yet, which I'm hoping to at the end of this week that you're listening, make sure you go to ahima.com and you'll find it, because it's on there. It's on their front page, and it's just crazy to me. Okay, I have a specialty coding question today. And it says, Terry, our physician said that our RNs now can call patients to check in on them, and we can now bill a phone call under telehealth. Did something change? We didn't see this. No, I had the same question come up in a Zoom call with some providers I was working with, and they said the same thing. They said, well, we weren't able, and this is how they said it, we weren't able to get phone calls paid before, but now that we can with our nurse. I'm like, whoa, 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 you mean your nurse practitioner? And they're like, no, our nurse. I said, no, you can't. Unless it's a Coumadin check, you can't, you know, under the Coumadin code, you can't get that paid. And they said, oh no, we can get it paid. I said, so what you're doing is the patient's calling, and it is a nurse anesthetist, or it's a clinical social worker, and they're billing the, you know, 989-86 code. So it's basically a phone call code for a qualified healthcare professional. And they're like, no, they're billing for either a phone call code or an office visit for a phone call by our nurse. Well, after my head exploded, I was just like, no, you can't do that. Your RNs cannot call patients. Actually, nobody can call patients and just say, hey, how you doing, and bill for a phone call. But RNs cannot do that. I don't care if they've been in your practice for 25 years. And through osmosis, they know just as much as the nurse practitioners do. Don't do it. You'll have to self-report and refund that money back. It's illegal. It is non-compliant. And it's wrong. So please, please don't do that. And I'm getting that a lot. And it's just so frustrating, if you couldn't hear it in my voice. But it's just so frustrating because nothing's changed in a year. Now, have things changed with regard to who will accept a phone call for audio only? Not for Medicare. You know, I'm very much on top of Medicare. Now, let's say that you're Anthem Blue Cross. Well, go to the website, because it just depends on who the medical group that they're under, the PPO plan. So for example, Sharp Medical, that's something here in Southern California. Well, they cover for certain office visit codes established only for members under providers who are preferred providers, yes, but they want a different modifier, either 95 or GT. They want a different place of service. They want the O2 place of service, which is the telehealth place of service. And they said that they will pay for those for established only. But look at websites. I know that Cigna said they would do it too, and then they stopped doing it in December. So commercial plans have their own rules, and it's up to you as coders and billers to make sure that you know when things are changing. And with Medicare, though, no, Medicare is clear. You may only, and so same with Medicare Advantage plans, audio only or phone calls, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs under the phone call codes 99441 to 443, and then office visits have to have that audio and video connection to be able to use an office visit code. So, and remember, this is temporary. You know, once the PHE ends, which I'm assuming they're probably going to extend it, I would think probably September, but we'll see. Right now it's supposed to end in April. I don't see that happening unless we see a major change after the vaccines. Now, we have seen a 44% decrease in COVID-related deaths, which is great, but we still see COVID testing, and we still see hospital admits. So hopefully that's going to decline here shortly too. But and we do see that light at the end of the tunnel. So we have seen that, but make sure for any of that you are clear on what each payer covers and doesn't cover, because not only will you have to send some refunds, but you could be heading for an audit and noncompliance, and it's not going to be pretty. Our coding question today is brought to you by Medical Economics, smarter business, better patient care. Follow us for the latest news and viewpoints on primary care, specialty care, and industry happenings in the business of medicine and health IT, ME.com. Okay, my personal tidbit this week. I was able to make a mini road trip to see my daughter last weekend in January for just 2 days. She lives in, most of you have heard me talk about it, in Arizona now. It was interesting because California, as you know, has been on lockdown where I'm at. And we just got a little bit of relaxation again. They keep going back and forth where restaurants can now have outdoor seating and, you know, nail salons can open, things like that. But the traffic, the packed shopping malls, now you don't find me in a shopping mall. I would never go in a mall. I shop online. But the, you know, we went to one restaurant. Yes, we wore a mask in, you know, no question. But I didn't think it was social distance. I felt like there was a lot of people there. And it just, I don't know, it was interesting. It was weird coming from California and just seeing everybody live their life normally. So for, you know, for those states that are open, boy, you know, lucky you, it's interesting. But I also, because I'm still a little, well, actually I'm a lot, not panicked, but just mindful of what's going on out there. So I did self-quarantine and I'm on day 9. And so I'm doing it for day 10 because I tested negative again before I went, as I mentioned. And I just want to make sure that I don't expose anybody just in case. My daughter had her first vaccine dose. And since she's a teacher, she was on the list. So I was happy she did. She has her second one in 2 weeks. And I think I'm going to wait for the Johnson & Johnson single dose. I hate needles. And I wonder what all of you think, you know, about the vaccine and if you're planning on getting it. I'd love to hear from you. For me, it's a tough call. And I'm just going to give you a personal reason. Because they're still telling people that get it that they have to still wear a mask, they still have to social distance, so nothing's changing. I thought that the vaccine is supposed to make it so now we can live in a free society once again. So where's the upside for me? I'm not understanding the upside. If you know where it is, you let me know. And so I'm a little bit on the fence about it, especially since I'm obviously not even close to 65, but you know, I am over 50, but still, I'm not one of the high risk individuals. I do work virtual. I work from home, so I work remotely. And so it doesn't make sense for me to take an injection from somebody else that really needs it. But I'd be really interested to see where you all stand on that. And the one thing that's driving me crazy right now are all these distribution centers that are being set up at football stadiums and sports outlets and movie theaters. And gosh, there's a Chick-fil-A doing them down by where I live. And yes, that'll get people in for sure. But for me, common sense is if you're a patient, especially an elderly patient, you don't want to be in a 2-hour line. You don't want to be in a drive-thru. I know one thing my daughter said was that she had to wait till her number was called. It was like a lottery. And it was at 11:27 at night on a Friday night when she got her first injection. Who stays up that late? I don't. But I would want to get it from my own personal physician. And I would think Medicare-age patients would too. And even non-Medicare-age patients. So I'm not understanding why primary care doctors and family medicine are not being able to give out vaccines. That makes no sense to me. So if you know that answer, you know more than I do on that. But it is kind of frustrating just to see how the distribution is going right now. I don't understand a lot of it. So I'll keep you posted on that. We'll see what's happening. Hopefully you'll get a copy of that that timeline and from AHIMA, and it'll help you with your testing and how you are reporting your diagnoses to patients if you're doing testing in your office. All right, everyone, that's it for me. Make it a great day and a great week, and I'll talk to you next week on the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer DeSassin Music.